time once again for Sports Sidebar, covering sports for Northeast Ohio and sometimes even a little outside that area. Sports Sidebar, where we prove that a little knowledge is dangerous, but even less knowledge makes it a little easier to fill an hour. Now on to our hosts, Captain Bill and Dave.
And good Tuesday afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another hour of Sports Sidebar. We're here with, back once again, Captain Bill. We're here, and, you know, she didn't get enough punishment in January, so she's back once again to another hour. Marla Ridenour from the Akron Beacon Journal. Thank you, Marla.
Welcome back, Marla.
You know, has it been January? It seems like a lifetime ago.
You know,
well, nothing's happened since then.
Nothing's happened, but time has slowed because of the being at home and all. And it's so funny how quickly the sports disappeared, and yet here you are, a sports writer and a sports columnist. And what the heck do you do when nothing's happening like this?
Well, I would say that the Browns actually saved all of us at the Beacon just because they still had, you know, Zoom calls, you know, when they had their, you know, even though they couldn't have their off-season training, you know, they still had Zooms. You know, at the beginning, you know, I was writing about, you know, Akron dropping the, you know, sports and, you know, the cross-country, you know, Clayton Murphy trying to save the program and, you know, the Olympics being canceled, you know, there were several Olympians at Akron U, especially track athletes, you know, that I interviewed. So, I mean, it hasn't been totally devoid of stories. I mean, I did write a column, you know, about kind of about my insensitivity in regards to the George Floyd thing. You know, what is something that I wrote in an email to the Cavs PR guy. You know, I mean, believe it or not, you know, I have lots of vacation and I have only taken 2 weeks. So, I mean,
wow.
And this week is extremely busy. Because I've got golf at Firestone. The Browns are starting practice on Friday. You know, we're starting a project actually, at the office that we have some responsibilities to do. So, it really hasn't been as bad. I mean, if I could say this, I mean, considering I've been covering professional sports for the Beacon since 1999, it's almost been good to sort of wind down and not work 12 hours a day. So, I actually think maybe I needed it.
Did this give you more time? I know that when we talked last time, you were saying that one thing you really loved to do was the stories, the conversations with the people, and that kind of. Is this giving you a lot more time for your feature stories of actually focusing on individuals?
Not as much as I'd like. I mean, I wrote one last week about Cavs coach Lindsey Gottlieb and how two of her players were actually coaching in the MAC, Melissa Jackson at Akron and Deanna Hendricks at Miami. That's my kind of story. And I feel like I haven't really written one of those since, because number one, you know, the sports section was cut back so we could devote more space to news. So there really hasn't been a whole lot of room in the paper. And, you know, the initial, like the Olympians were very emotional. Those were good, but it really hasn't been probably what I'd like in that regard. But like I said, it would have been difficult to get some of those things in the paper anyway. I mean, I look back to when I wrote about Drew Joyce joining the Cleveland State basketball staff, and Drew Joyce III kind of is like my last good pre-pandemic feature, and it's just now kind of starting back. It was great to talk to Darren Clark the other day about him coming back to Akron the golfer.
Yes.
I like that story just because he and his wife haven't seen each other for 5 months. She's been in Northern Ireland and he's been in the Bahamas. That was really cool. But, you know, he and I've got a relationship going back years, and it was great to talk to him again. So, actually, some of these golf, I mean, the golf interviews this week, I'm hoping to get, you know, a few, like, kind of personal stories from them as well, just about what they've been through and you know, what it's like to play golf, you know. I mean, I know they haven't, the senior tour hasn't been back, you know, very long, but no. Just what it's like to come here and know that there's not going to be anybody watching you.
The article about Hale Irwin, I can't believe he's now in his mid-70s. I remember following him and Tom Kite and some of the other ones, and it's interesting now that he really can't perform the way he wants to, does he? He just, he's there, I guess, for promotional purposes, but he's picking and choosing where he plays.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I didn't put all the details in, but just when he talked about having that problem with his foot, I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's arthritis, we all have that, you know, like... I had foot surgery, you know, I had foot surgery too back in the day, not that long ago. But it's a bizarre thing he has. He said, even though it's called like a bunion net, it's not really a net. It's like a separation of the small bones.
Ooh.
By his little toe. I mean, it's, you know, and he made it sound like there was no guarantees that even the surgery would maybe fix it. I mean, you know, when you're dealing with little bones, you know, I mean, I totally understand his trepidation, but he really sounded awesome, like, you know, still fired up about golf, you know, very upbeat, you know, great memories of Akron, you know, so in a way, I sort of felt bad that he can't play more, just because you could tell inside he's still got the drive, you know.
Now, in that article...
Well, I've had a couple bunion surgeries, so I know what he's... He went through, and I don't know about a bunion net. I've never heard of that one, but you're laid up for 6 weeks and you're hopping around on one foot, and it's a lot more serious than people think. And so I give him credit for trying to get back.
Yeah, I mean, but he just right now doesn't feel like the surgery is worth the 6 months rehab. I mean, I know,
yeah.
I actually, the bone in my big toe was like way longer than the other one, and the guy actually fixed that. And I was like, I had to like take the back off a desk chair and roll around the kitchen, you know, for several weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, but no, I mean, I am looking forward. I mean, there's going to be some good players there, you know, Elves and Stricker and, you know, Longer is just amazing. I mean, I think we're going to have a good field and that, you know, that'll kind of get my juices flowing about like, somewhat back to normal, but I will tell you this is the first time I've left the house to cover an assignment, so since the pandemic began, you know, like when the Indians came back, their media policy is that you can only have one person per outlet because of the limited space in the press box because of social distancing, so, and I know I had a conversation with the Browns PR guy about, will you come to the games in the fall? And I said, well, I haven't been anywhere, so let me talk to you after I go to this golf tournament, you know, like.
It'll be a little strange, you know, on it without anybody there. I mean, other than reporters, I mean, no.
Yeah, there's not any report. No, there's no fans. They're not, and I don't think there'll be that many media. Like, I texted with my buddies in Columbus when the Memorial Tournament was going on, and they said there were 10 people in the press room. Two Columbus Dispatch writers and 8 Nationals, and that was it. So even that part's going to be weird because even last year when it was the, you know, the first year of the Champions event, you know, there was still, you know, TV, radio, you know, you don't know how much of that's going to be considering, you know, it's not quite the same right now. And then plus with all this uncertainty about high school sports and with the Big Ten today. I mean, you don't know. It's,
well, uncertainty rules the world right now.
It certainly does. And I'm telling you, I go back and forth about next year, too. I really don't think our journalistic lives are going to be normal next year either. So,
you know, that's one thing that Bill brought up about a couple of weeks ago. Is this going to be the way that it will always be, that some of the announcers won't necessarily travel with the team and they'll call it off the television as you're seeing it, and all the press conferences will be through Zoom and things like that? Or do you think we'll return to some kind of normalcy when we get to a vaccination?
Oh, I'm hoping it's normalcy when they get to a vaccination. But, I mean, that is a fear of, you know, several professional organizations you know, like the basketball writers and, you know, the football writers. I mean, you worry that the precedent is set, you know, and will they try to make that permanent? The same thing with us worrying about, you know, traveling with the Browns, for example, you know. Right now, I think they're gonna, our company, Gannett, has a travel ban. You know, I don't know if, like, maybe if the Browns were good, but there's really no point in traveling this year. Except the view of the sideline, you're not going to really get anything in person that you wouldn't get, you know, since there's no availability, no locker rooms open, any of that. So, well, and I mean, there's so many issues that have come up, like, do we really even need a newsroom? And we've just moved into this great spot in a building downtown. I think it's the 7th floor of the AES building. And does the Beacon Journal read? They just put the sign up right before, or maybe even the early days of the pandemic. Do you really need a whole floor of an office building, or most of a floor, you know? There's a lot of things that are going to be, we're going to be rethinking here.
Well, have you been able to go to the office, or is most of your work now just through the web?
No, just working in my, I am telling you, I'm so happy. I mean, I actually have a much bigger house than I really need. Mm-hmm. But I bought this house because it has a loft at the top of the stairs where I said that's exactly where I, what I need for my office, because it's got, I've got an L-shaped desk with the, it overlooks the street, so I'm not, I don't have to sit at my kitchen table or in a bedroom or the basement or, you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. My biggest concern right now is I need a new office chair, and they're, obviously they're expensive because of the demand.
Yeah.
It's been a great setup for me as far as being at home and the Zoom thing. I mean, obviously you need a little, there were a few bugs with the Zooms at the beginning, and you have to learn how to raise your hands and do all these things, but
you know
what I'm talking about. There's a few, there's protocol, there's a little etiquette on Zoom. So
yeah, I feel your pain. I'm a delegate to the Democratic National Convention, and it's something I always wanted to do was attend a convention. I finally got a lot of people to show up for me, and back in January, anticipating being able to meet all the, you know, the various high-level politicians, and I'm done. I've already voted on the web, and so all that kind of extracurriculars that you enjoy at one of these functions I've never been to, but I've heard that were just wonderful to go to. Here I am in front of my desk, and I'm all done, other than watching what happens. And it's a lot of opportunities have mine small compared to the sacrifices a lot of people are making, but it's just amazing how this has affected just about everybody.
No, I know. I agree. And, you know, I have no idea how much longer I'm going to be writing before I retire, but the last thing I covered in person with fans in the stands was a first-round MAC tournament game at Kent State. You know, like, who knows how long it's going to be before there's fans in the stands again. I mean,
yeah.
I'm very skeptical about that, you know,
yeah.
As far as the NFL. So, you know, that, like I said, something so trivial as sports. I mean, when you see so many people out of work and, you know, I mean, we had, you know, furlough weeks that we had to take, and just navigating the unemployment world when it's like they changed the form or the rules every week, you know, it was just frustrating. So I it's really been amazing just all we've been through this year.
Well, I have really not noticed, and I'm sure that the people who cover, like Matt Underwood and Rick Manning and Andre Knott and the guys, Tom Hamilton and Jim Rosenhaus, those guys have done a really, really good job watching the game on TV and away games. And that's what I mentioned to David a week or so ago is, you see more like Sinclair Broadcasting, I guess, is known for its cost cutting. And will these gentlemen have the opportunity to continue their craft by talking to the players? That's what I'm sure you miss tremendously is maybe talking to the coaches and the players, you know, before and after the game.
Right. I mean, that's like, I can't, I mean, if I do go to the Browns home opener and you can't go in the locker room, I'm sure this is going to be killing me. You know, like,
yeah.
Just the scene. I mean, I'm kind of a sports psychologist. I like to kind of look at their faces and see how they're feeling. And you can't see that over Zoom. You know, you can't get the sense of what the locker room feels like. Or, you know, there's not going to be, like, so many of us, like, especially the beat writers who, you know, like to try to develop a relationship with the new players. Well, that's not going to happen this year, you know. I mean, granted, like in the pro ranks, that's not like it used to be, but you still do talk to guys, you know, on the side sometimes when you're not, you know, you're just having a conversation. So that's what we're going to miss. And who knows if that comes back.
Doesn't that give you more of the really personal side of them and their lives and things like that when you get a chance for even a few moments here and there one-on-one and being able to connect with you? They're connecting with you, and they feel confident in what you do and what you write.
Well, right, kind of like what I said about Darren Clark. I mean, I've been writing about him for so many years that we can have a phone conversation, and he could open up and trust me. I mean, you have to develop that trust in person, in my opinion. So, I worry that will be lost. I really do. Plus, you know, you just don't know, like, the future of our industry anyway. And, you know, it's funny what you were saying about, you know, will those guys go on the road? I mean, it hasn't been that long ago. It was when when the Cavs went to the finals when LeBron came back and didn't win. And they didn't want me to go to the final, you know, road trips for the finals. And I said, well, if they win, I'm not writing a column off the television. And, you know, it's like, that was something I was so adamant that I wouldn't do in my lifetime just because I don't believe in it. And now we're all doing it, you know, like,
right.
That's why, you know, I'm hopeful that this isn't forever because I just, you get the feel of the atmosphere and everything. You know, I will agree with you about the Indians and, you know, everything there, you know, the NBA, you know, piping in the crowd noise and the virtual fans. And, I mean, it hasn't looked on TV as bad as I expected. I must admit that.
Well,
I'm sure glad baseball's back. I was fortunate enough to, the week before they shut everything down, to go to spring training in Goodyear. And I was getting really excited. We get back to on a Monday and Wednesday, everything shuts down. It was amazing, and I don't think anybody anticipated such an impact that this. Of course, we just didn't know. We didn't know how the autonomy, I guess, of this epidemic, how it was spread and things like that. But my goodness, it was amazing. The complete shutdown of just about everything that wasn't considered essential.
Right. You were lucky. I used to love going to spring training. I used to go for vacation almost, you know, virtually every year. So I just love that trip. So.
It is. It was my eighth time there, my wife and I going, and I really don't know if they're going to allow anybody next year. It's kind of a head scratcher whether we'll be able to attend it. We now developed some good restaurants to go to and things like that. But you know, Phoenix is not exactly the safest place or the Goodyear area.
No.
I have to ask you about your article, The Athletics versus the Academia. And I've read it, and I thought you made some very, very good points about Matthew Cherry and Jason Taylor and Matt Kulig bringing to the university notoriety and we wouldn't have received, and who knows the marketing effects that those individuals have. You have an Academy Award winning producer who used to play football, and that was out there. How much is that to the university? But then I guess you got some feedback from the faculty, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, they let me know, the office, let me know when the academics, wrote that letter that was going to appear. And I didn't have any problem with that.
No, there's no right or wrong here.
Although, they accused me of sort of being in the back pocket of the sports, administration. But I still think that's invaluable. Clayton Murphy went to Akron. I just don't believe that dropping down in class is the answer. I mean, every university is hurting, and now, these Big Ten schools are going to feel it too. So I just think a knee-jerk reaction right now, but I don't know, like I said, how much you can afford to lose, but are you really going to pay all these penalty fees to the MAC by dropping out? And I don't know. I feel like the Matthew Cherys of the world sort of make you relevant. I know they don't feel that way. They feel like it's how many good engineers or, businessmen are we and women are we training, but I don't know, I still feel like your university is somewhat defined by your, your prominent graduates and especially sports, graduates. So like I said, I didn't mind the blowback at all.
Well, you can understand their feelings. I mean, my goodness, they're facing tremendous cuts in the faculty, and they're just trying to grasp whatever they can to lessen the blow to their, rank and file members of the professors union. But there's no good answer here. There's no bad answer. I mean, it's just you're losing $65 million to your budget is such a blow. Now, that's what the administration says is going to happen. But they're saying, okay, what's more important? And I think there's, it's a good point that you make out. If Jason Taylor, for goodness sake, I think he's the only Hall of Famer we have from the University
of Akron. Right. So how many of those are going to walk through the door if you're playing Division II or Division III football? He's going to be the only one forever, my biggest thing with that whole thing is I wish they had formed that committee about the athletics before they started cutting all this. I feel like if they'd have had input from all the coaches and everything about how they could trim before they just announced that we're whacking these sports and we're cutting these faculty. And I mean, most of these people were blindsided. I don't really believe that the process and how they went about it. I understand there has to be cuts, and that's really, and losing so many faculty is huge, but I kind of wish they had been able to, nip and tuck at several different places without such drastic moves. I'm not against the academic side at all. I got a double major in college, and I understand how important, I wanted a fallback for you. I know that if you don't have a good person teaching you, especially for me, like economics and statistics and accounting, it depended on the professor, kind of like what grade I got. If you don't have the the best people in your faculty, you're suffering. The students are suffering. I totally get that. I can testify to that in several courses I took. So I don't want people to think that I'm not supporting and don't feel for all those people that are looking at layoffs.
Well, it's a decision, like you said, though, that these certain soccer and to a certain extent the basketball team has done better here recently, and the women's basketball is being improved, and there is notoriety and attract Olympians that were coming out of the University of Akron. It does have a positive effect on the image. This whole battle between the faculty and your, as a graduate of the University of Akron, I'm very concerned. I'm very, very concerned about the viability of both academia and athletics.
You know, I had someone email me recently that thinks Akron Kent State should merge. I can't ever see that happening.
I've heard that since I've been going there when I was there as a Ute, and yeah, that's it didn't work then. I don't see how that could work now.
No, I just don't see it. But I mean, I do think that there's going to be. I mean, consider it. If this vaccine doesn't come soon, and if the economic factors, are gonna, it's gonna. A lot of universities are going to be in trouble. I mean, they already are. So I can't imagine how much worse it's going to get the longer this goes.
Well, I think the question of football right now is moot. I mean, the MAC has suspended at least all sports, I believe.
And they're going to try to play in the spring. We'll see about that,
Yeah. And then I heard on The Fan this morning that basically the Big Ten, as the college presidents, have moved to also suspend fall sports to the spring. I don't know how that works. You're going to have Michigan and Ohio State on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think all the Power Five schools are, I know these kids say they want to play, but, the liability and, it's just the cases are exploding. I don't see that being better by the end of August. You know what I mean? Significantly better. So, I don't know what's going to happen nationally, but it doesn't look good to me. I mean, my biggest thing was from the very beginning was off the offensive and defensive linemen, are in constant contact, and I don't know how that can work.
You know, with it exploding, like you mentioned, do you see, especially with the problems that baseball has had, do you think they're even going to make it to postseason?
Well, it requires so much discipline from these guys. That was my concern about baseball from the very beginning, and that's going to be my concern with the NFL. You're still flying, you're still staying in hotels, the temptation to go out on the road. Even the other day, Darren Clark said, they don't really want us to eat indoors at a restaurant. Are these guys going to be able to, maintain and follow all these rules, So, I don't know. It's concerning.
Yeah, I guess Zach had trouble with that, didn't he?
Yeah, they certainly did the right thing there, sending him home immediately.
Right.
So
that was interesting. I they always praise Zach as being a conscious young man, and then he pitches a really good game, then goes out with a bunch of friends to break the protocol. It seemed a little bit unusual out of common behavior that he normally has, and that's all it takes, I guess. This is puzzling to me. You have St. Louis. They're 2-3. They have no game scheduled. How in the world are they going to make up? They're already 12 games behind, and I know the Marlins got to make up at least 7 games in doubleheaders. You can't have a pitching staff that will have any arms left if you go having 2 or 3 doubleheaders every other day.
Well, that's what they're probably going to have to do. Although I did hear something about maybe they could, it would just go by winning percentage, but you can't play that huge amount of, fewer games than think that's comparable.
Right.
I mean, but the other thing is though, like, yeah, how are they going to keep up the with double headers and, you know, the summer and the heat and I don't know. I can remember what traditional double headers used to be back at, like in the old days, even for a fan of the fans, I can't imagine. So I don't know how this is going to work out, but obviously they seem to be willing to live with the Marlins and the Cardinals missteps and still continue. I don't know.
For example, Detroit is in second place in the Central.
Right.
They've only played 13. We played 17. But their winning percentage is .615. So let's say they only play 45, 48 games and their winning percentage is higher than ours, but we won more games. And they make the second spot or the first spot because of their percentage. I can't see how that's fair. I just don't see that, if you win 25 games and lose 15 and that's all you could play, you're in. I don't know.
They did put the provision in that they expanded the playoffs, I assume, because of the sort of cover part of that. But
yeah.
I still think it's kind of, but everything about 2020 is going to have an asterisk. So what's the difference, I guess?
You're right. You're absolutely right. What do you think about some of the changes? I know late Sunday night, the Indians played their second extra inning game, and they won. But they lost their first one by putting a runner on at second. What do you think about that rule? I mean, I know it's part of this whole mix that we're in with the coronavirus, but do you like that rule?
Well, I get it. But, my reaction was kind of the same as Clevenger's on the first one because, he obviously hated it. But, like, last night when I'm watching, I'm thinking, would Francona have done the same thing with that squeeze play?
You
have to totally change your strategy, and it made me wonder if maybe, obviously, I would assume the Indians have the coaching staff has talked about their strategy more since the first one was such a bad outcome. But, it did cross my mind, does Francona call for that squeeze? Or, I haven't read everything about last night's game, but I think Alomar said it wasn't entirely up to him. But, but he did have the situation where he had the perfect guy at the plate to do it. So, I don't know, I get it, and especially now with, the doubleheader factor and all that kind of thing. You can't have these guys playing 20 innings. So I understand it. I think it's only going to be temporary, I guess.
But you didn't answer the question.
You
get it, or do you like it? Yeah.
I don't like it, but I don't think it's going to be forever.
I would hope not.
I don't know. There's a lot of people who like it.
The Indians lost that game in the 10th when they didn't. When the other team didn't get a hit, and I guess
they could have had that game too if you recall.
They could have. They were at bases loaded with one out in the bottom of the ninth and couldn't push one across. I understand that, but the fact is when you lose a game because the guy starts on second, he gets bunted to third, and the sacrifice home, so there's been no hits, but there's a run in, and you don't respond in the second half in your half. It just doesn't seem right. I really hope you're right, Marla, because I don't like that rule. I wasn't real crazy about it for minor leagues, let alone playing it in the majors that way.
I'm hoping this is. I mean, I do like. I mean, part of me likes this because I'm a Reds fan. I grew up with the National League. I mean, I like that scratching out a run thing you almost have to build your team differently in my opinion. More speed, guys who know how to bunt. I mean, how many times have you seen guys try to bunt who don't even know?
I think the National League is going to go universal designated hitter. It's season and say, you know, everybody likes the designated hitter more than the pitcher coming up. And I think that is one rule that will be here to stay, don't you?
Well, like I said, I don't know anything. I mean, baseball doesn't seem to do anything, like, logical half the time. So
it's true. It's tradition. Yeah. It's tradition.
Yeah.
I really do think, though, that they're going to go with the universal designated hitter. I just, you know, with 30 teams and one team playing a National League team every day, I think the move is there, and it gives some aging players maybe an advantage to play a couple more years after they're able to, if they don't have to play defense. Yeah. So.
How long could Jim Thome have played had he not had the DH?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, no, I agree with that. I guess there's parts of it that I'm okay with. You know, I don't know. You know, baseball. There's so many traditionalists who, you know, don't hate to give things up in baseball and fans. The powers that be. But I can see it. You know, I can see it. I mean, how many pitchers, you know, really get to hit much even in college or the minors or, you know, like, back in the day, there used to be some pretty good hitting pitchers. I remember Jose Rio was really good. So, you know, that doesn't seem to be a thing anymore. So, I understand. I'm okay with it.
You know, and you know what? I was born in Springfield, Ohio, and so I followed the Reds, and you know, being that my first professional sport of any kind I went to was a Cincinnati Reds game with my dad and my uncle and my grandfather. And so I do like the idea of having the pitcher up there. It really sets up an entirely different kind of game. But what ruined it for me is when we have interleague games, at least one interleague game every day, if not more. Certainly, I don't mean just this year, but even in past years, because the league was made uneven, you have at least one game every day, and it just isn't right to be playing every day with two different sets of rules.
No, I agree. You know, like I said, some of these things that are being, you know, put in now probably will be permanent, and that'd probably be number one on the list.
Well, it seems like about every 5 years the National League owners have voted whether to go with a DH or not. And every vote, they seem to get more and more owners willing to go that direction. And this may have been the thing that possibly helps them finish the decision.
Well, I think it's here to stay. But who am I? Who am I to judge what's going on? What do you think about the Indians so far, Marla? I think about 10-7. Their offense has just been horrid. Their pitching has been tremendous. It's just... my goodness, losing 2-0 and 3-0 or 2-1. Shane Bieber, do you think he's a real McCoy, better than some people are saying Kluber was?
I love Bieber. I mean, the pitching is unbelievable. I mean, it is kind of stunning how fast this seemingly happened from All-Star MVP to a Cy Young candidate, you know, but I was in total agreement that about letting Kluber go. I really do think the innings have taken their toll. I mean, you know, now he's hurt again, you know, like, as the Indians used to be really good at getting rid of guys, you know, right before they fell off the cliff or they really declined. And I thought that was smart, but I'm more surprised about the rest of them, like Savale and, you know, just some of these other guys. I mean, you got three guys out of the 2016 draft or what? I mean, it's just kind of mind-boggling how great that pitching staff set up.
And Bieber was actually drafted below two of the other guys that were in that draft.
Right. I mean, you know, just, you know, I really, but, you know, I covered that All-Star game, and I was just so impressed with his parents, his demeanor after the game. I mean, it's such a great thing, but, I mean, you have to be able to handle it, and he seems like he's doing a tremendous job handling it. Now, the offense, I mean, oh, God. I mean, I just, part of me wonders, like, are they really, they don't hit in the clutch. I mean, and now with the pressure of a 60-game season or, you know, maybe fewer, like, I don't know if they have that, that many guys with the clutch gene. You know, and you look at the team like the White Sox, who's got, you know, God, the dream lineup of big boppers, you know, like, I don't know. Like I said, as much as you think that pitching can carry you in the playoffs, I am still extremely concerned about their lineup.
Well, here we are, 17 games in, and the highest batting average is .291. That's, you know, that's good, but you would think with 17 games, it'd be some guys hitting 350, 360 just by virtue of the low at bats. And my goodness, you look down this lineup and, the Shields, he's 375, but he's only been around for a week or so. But, there's no offense from the catchers. Bo Taylor and Leon are just, they get up and you just say, you might as well forget it. It's just, that's sad. And, you know, Lindor hasn't caught fire yet. I'm sure he will. Everybody says he will. But, and that's another fact, Marla, is how the free agent market will be affected by this short season.
Well, I do think it's going to be affected. I mean, I think it might give you a chance to keep him for another year, especially if this season gets shut down, you know, like before it's over, you know what I mean? But I mean, you can't hang your hat on that, but I mean, no. That also makes me wonder if that's contributing to the pressure and why they're offensively, you know, challenged just because they think it's Frankie's last year and, you know, we got to do this. I don't know. It seems like, you know, psychologically, I don't know if they're playing just like with that love of the game and not with the pressure of being a contender, especially the pressure to live up to what your pitching staff is doing.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm wondering, too, is even with the playoffs and the expanded playoffs, is the money going to be there for all your medium market teams like Pittsburgh, like Cleveland, like Cincinnati and such? Is the money not going to be there to have the big offerings?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, free agency could be, you know, you might have to, you know, punt on next year and see if it comes back with, you know, 2022. So, like I said, that might help, you know, if you want to keep Frankie. It's going to depend on what people are willing to give up. You can't get a bunch of prospects. You have to get them guys who are virtually ready to play if you're going to let him go.
That's true, yeah.
Well, they say, if everything was normal, he's going to be almost Mike Trout type of money that he was going to perhaps get. That's questionable, but now with the revenues drastically reduced, of course, you know, these guys who own the Angels and the Yankees and some of these other big market teams could probably dip into their own pocket and promise him that kind of money, but he's kind of the heart and soul of this team. Even though he's not doing great right now, he's obviously the leader and be a big, big loss.
I guess I would agree with that, but I don't. Part of me thinks it's Carrasco and Lynn, and you know, maybe I don't know Santana, Ramirez. I don't know if he's the leader and he's the face of the franchise, but I don't know how much of in the clubhouse, because obviously even in the important parts of what's going on in the clubhouse, we don't get to see even when we're allowed in there. So, there's no way the Indians are paying him Mike Trout money. So if that's the case, but the clock has been ticking for a long time on him. So I really don't. I think he wants to go to a big market. So I would be shocked if he stayed for longer than one more, you know, one-year deal to kind of because of the economy.
I agree. I think he would probably, if his agent said, you know, you need to get another year, 2022, and to reach the maximal potential. That may be good advice, but who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Terry Francona's going to get back. Have you heard anything through your contacts about his condition? That is it serious? It sounds like he'll be back, but it, my goodness gracious, he's been off for a while.
He's supposed to be back tomorrow, from what our Indians beat writer just tweeted a little bit ago. So, but I don't know. You know, they've been saying he's had this condition for a while. I mean, it is concerning, but he has medical issues, you know, so.
Right.
So anyway, it's just, like, and I assume they don't, like, if he's, I don't know, like I said, I really don't know how bad he is. So, obviously it was at least a discomfort factor, but if, you know, if he had some kind of infection or anything, you don't want to rush him back.
Yeah.
Into the COVID-19 world, so. Yeah.
And you still had a steady hand with Sandy Alomar, who went from first base coach to running the team.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been baffled as to, you know, why hasn't Sandy gotten a managing job? So, you know, I do feel like part of me thinks this is a good showcase for him in that regard, because, you know,
from what I've heard, he is not real good at self-promotion. And if you really want the job, you really got to push yourself.
Right, and then you have to be, like, I heard the same thing about someone that I know personally who was an NFL coaching candidate. They say he didn't interview well, you know, like, and, you know, you have to do the same thing. If you're Alomar and you're getting these interviews, you really got to sell yourself. And, you know, if you go in there just thinking that I'm Sandy Alomar, I don't need to convince you to hire, you know, convince a bunch of people to hire me. So, I don't know, but like I said, I do feel like he's kind of, this is good for him, especially to be like on national TV calling the shots. So.
If he's calling the shots, Marla, you intimated that maybe he didn't call that.
Well, I know, but I read something in the last few hours about he wasn't ready to take all the credit, but that would be total Sandy.
Yeah.
Too. Like, you know, like Francona will never criticize his players. Well, I think Sandy has been a little more critical and that, you know, that kind of thing, but he's not going to toot his own horn about, this was all me. So, like I said, I did read that this morning, but I don't think he took total credit for it. But I just think that's his, you know, wanting to say that, you know, the players pulled it off perfectly. So it wasn't.
It was a good game to watch until the rain, and I had to go to bed.
Well, I switched over to watch something else and switched back at the perfect time, but I was starting to think the wheels were coming off just like against the Cubs, you know, rain delay, you know, from against Chicago teams is not good. So,
yeah. I'm a little concerned about Brad Hand. You know, there's been a move by some people to suggest that, Karinchak should be the new reliever, but I think Brad Hand, by virtue of his experience and record, should still be given an opportunity to prove himself, you know, worthy of staying as reliever. What's your thought about that?
Well, I saw that, you know, sort of uproar about, you know, I think that's too soon to rush Karinchak in there. I mean, I just, you know, but, you know, Hand has not been the most, you know, I told one of my friends, I almost feel like it's like Bob Wickman. Every time he comes in, sort of close your eyes and pray, you know, like, I mean, God, you know, he was in the All-Star game, you know, he's obviously got the, you know, the reputation, but I'm not as confident in him as I once was.
That good old Bob Wickman.
We've had a history of closers that have made white knuckles out of all of us in the ninth inning in most cases. I forgot the young man who was beforehand, who we traded away or didn't resign. Name escapes me. But now I hear he's out of baseball. So they pretty much thought he was done. It's tough. It's tough to psychologically and physically to come in when all these games are on the line. And the arms just wear out because of all the usage.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, that is hard to, you know, like I said, the Indians have in the past had a good handle on that, but, you know, sometimes it happens fast, so, you know, a guy that throws 100 miles an hour, yeah, that sounds great in theory, but is he really ready for the pressure of it, especially when you're, you know, like, bidding for the playoffs, you know, kind of thing.
Well, football, I don't think we're going to have high school football. I really don't, no matter what people are saying about having McKinley Mass one game and six-game season. I just can't imagine that if you're going to have most schools go virtual, that you can say, okay, it's okay to play football. I guess with looks like college football is going to be at least suspended by and large. Well, do we have professional football? What do you think?
I think we're going to have it at least to start the season. And then we'll see, like I said, what happens in the travel and all that. But the missing piece of the puzzle here that some people aren't really thinking about is how much it costs to test, like to test college athletes, to, you know, high school athletes. Like, for example, a PR person in the NFL told me that it costs $125 a day, each test.
Wow.
So just think about testing a football team and how much money that is. And, you know, and Jared Ambick, the Akron soccer coach, told me that they were hearing they probably couldn't afford to test their players more than every 2 weeks. And he's like, we could be playing like six games in a 14-day span. So I think a huge part of this is the testing issue and the cost of the testing, the fact you can't get the results back very fast. I mean, I just heard of a pastor of a friend that texted me this morning about his pastor has COVID and he took him 8 days to find out. Like,
yeah.
You know, so, no, but the point is like, I think that's a huge part of this. It's just if we had the testing resources, you'd still have to come up with the money to do it. So that's why I'm thinking the pros can afford it, but I don't think the high schools and colleges can.
Then why is the High School Athletic Association keep floating this idea that, well, it's up to the schools and this and that? Shouldn't they, at this point, sit down and make a determination?
Well, I do, but, I mean, you've had this upheaval in it, OHSAA, that I don't think that's really helped the Ohio situation. I think they need to come up with an across-the-board thing and say, you know, they certainly shouldn't be playing on September 1st or whatever they're talking about.
A couple of weeks, actually, August 21st or something like that. They want to make, I believe it's my opinion, they want to make the governor the bad guy. And the governor says you shouldn't play, so you can't play. And taking the blame and shifting it to the governor and really not taking the kids into consideration. If I was a parent of a high school student, maybe I wouldn't worry about them so much, but bringing it home to mom and dad and grandpa and grandma is a concern. But the Browns, what's your feeling about how they're going to do this year? And if we have a season, hopefully we'll have a season. Probably very little fans. I know that they're going to reduce if they have fans at all, to 20% of the capacity.
Well, we had to make predictions for a publication that we're putting out. And I know this isn't going to help your audience, but we are doing another Brown magazine for the Beacon Journal that'll come out, you know, right before the season opener. I picked them to be 9-7, but I think they're going to be wild card material. I don't see them winning the division as long as Lamar Jackson has another season like that. And, you know, you never know about Roethlisberger. I know he's getting up there in age, but I do feel like, you know, this is going to be an extremely tough division. So, And you also, you know, you have a new coach. These guys haven't been together. They don't know each other. I mean, with Freddie being gone, and I love Freddie personally, but things were so off. It was so disorganized, and game day was such a disaster that I think Stefanski's like attention to detail and organization is going to make a difference right away. But you still, he doesn't know his guys. He doesn't know their strengths. I think expecting them to be world beaters this year is a little off the charts. I think they could make the playoffs, but and you know, you also worry about their depth. I mean, I don't like the linebacking core. And, you know, what if you have, you know, cases of COVID or, you know, the secondary's got some suspect spots.
The backups to the offensive line, some of them took the buyout or the.
Right, opted out,
Opted out.
So, I mean, depth will be a factor. And, you know, like, when you've had so many bad drafts in a row, I mean, that affects your depth just as much as it does as your starting lineup. Like, you know, that's what people, I always tell people, that's why the Browns special teams are usually terrible, because that's where you get your special teams players is the draft, and your draft has been, you know, bad. So, I do think talent-wise, offensively, I mean, it could be great to watch. I'm curious to see how this, you know, two tight end thing works out. I love Nick Chubb, although he certainly doesn't love us, as far as the media.
Is that right?
He is does not like talking to the media. I think the offense is going to be something really fun to watch. I hope so. I mean, I can't even remember a time when I thought the offense was fun to watch since Lindy and Fonny left, and that's showing my age. So,
yeah, there you go.
Back in the Bernie Kosar days. So, you know, like, but like I said, I got some questions still. Mostly at depth and defense.
Well, I hate to break this up, but man, we've gone through our whole hour already, and I can't believe
it
has flown by. And Marla, you were so gracious to come back on with us again, even after the punishment we gave you last time. It's amazing.
Well, I enjoy talking to you, and I'm glad to reach out to the people that you're reaching, that you know you're serving here. So, my pleasure.
And we do cover the sports pretty well, and we probably will have somebody read that booklet so that people can keep up with the Browns and such.
I will say we have some really good, like Nate Ark did a great job. We've got fantastic features on Stefanski and Barry. I mean, I wrote a big column about Baker Mayfield, and I talked to Brady Quinn and Boomer Esiason about him. There's some good things in there that I think your listeners would enjoy, so hopefully you guys can get one.
Yeah. Thank you so
much. Thank you, Marla.
And we will see everybody next week back here again on Sportside.
Take care.